I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, Seattle passes two ordinances to try to help with its drug and crime crisis. Will it work? Plus, the head of the state Republican Party joins us to talk about their back-to-back election integrity lawsuits. And California Governor Gavin Newsom's new law is a slippery slope for First Amendment-protected speech. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at UndividedPod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Debate day in Washington. Multiple debates happening today. There's coming up at 12:30. The attorney general candidates are debating. I believe also OSPI, the two people who want to be the head of our public school system, debating today. I think a commissioner of public lands debate as well. And then tonight, a gubernatorial debate. So we're not going to be doing a debate night special. I'll actually be heading to Spokane immediately after the show today to watch the gubernatorial debate in person. But of course, tomorrow on the live show, we will have a debrief of all the big moments. You're not going to want to miss tomorrow's show. But if you want to watch those debates, you can find them all on TVW. Also, if you're over in Spokane, I believe it'll be broadcast on one of the TV stations there. At least the gubernatorial debate will. So there's going to be a lot to talk about tomorrow, but I think it'll be a good day for people who love politics, which is all of you. All right. Speaking of a good day, it was a good day at the Seattle City Council yesterday. You know, you have a more moderate Seattle City Council that I think was elected with this mandate to do something about the homeless crisis, the drug crisis, the crime crisis, etc. And, you know, they're more moderate. It's obviously all relative. They're all still shades of blue, but it is a huge departure from the borderline socialist tendencies of the last council members. So they passed two things yesterday, two ordinances designed to try to give police more tools to get the drug crisis under control, the crime crisis, the prostitution crisis that is really plaguing North Seattle. They passed two ordinances. One is called a soda and one is called a soap. So stay out of drug area and a stay out of area of prostitution. And Seattle has had these before. This isn't a new idea. It's just that whenever the political winds change in Seattle and you've got activists that show up and say, oh, this law is racist or this law is like hurting sex workers or whatever it is, then you'll have a council that says, okay, we'll get rid of them. And then every couple years, you get a more sane council. Things get really bad. They're like, okay, we'll put them back in place. And there just isn't this political will to really keep them. So I think the question is, are they going to stick this time? If you're not familiar with these sorts of policies, these stay out of policies, it's like if you're a known drug user, or you've already been, you know, arrested for drug dealing or for, you know, ticketed for using drugs, then police can also hit you with a soda. So you're not allowed. They have literally a geographical area and there's multiple of them. You're not allowed to go in this area. And just the act of being in that area means you're subject to arrest, whether you're using drugs or not. And then the same thing with the soap, the stay out of an area of prostitution. If you've been a John or something and you've been ticketed or you've been in trouble for trying to solicit a prostitute on Aurora Avenue and they see you back up there again, well, just the act of you being present in that area is enough to get you arrested. So anyway, there was a lot of speakers, as there often is, when the Seattle City Council is debating one of these policies. And so we thought we'd give you a little taste of what Seattle council members were met with before their vote.
Good morning. My name is Bingo, and I'm here again today because I'm a disabled survival sex worker and performer in District 7, here to oppose both the soap and soda bills. I testified against these bills last city council meeting about it, and I'm absolutely appalled by your passing of it. You heard me, yes? Yes, are going to kill us. This bill is going to kill us.
Some of you I know have suffered addiction. Can you honestly say going to jail and being marginalized would have helped you? No, it wouldn't have. If you actually wanted to work on public safety, you would consider doing something like harm. But what's really at the heart of this law is that you don't want to see poor people suffering.
You will be remembered for your actions in this watershed legislation. You know that this will create a ripple effect in the region, aggravating the climate of anti-homelessness and the racist war on drugs, and further criminalizing sex workers.
I want you to close your eyes and envision a sex worker. Do I strike you as a sex worker? Or simply just another person that lives in Seattle? Now tell me, what do you think a sex worker looks like? You can't, because we are all different people with different identities and different backgrounds.
Sex workers in all corners of the industry say this year has been more financially tough than most. Some of us solely rely on this to survive. We know best how to do it safely, not to have the state criminalize us as they speculate and project a false narrative onto an already highly stigmatized profession. We keep each other safe.
I support legalizing sex work. It's not going away. Sex workers deserve autonomy, not being recruited by a man and sold to another man. They deserve to verify their clients online, not gamble with whoever drives up to them. They deserve workplace safety, like not getting shot by a rival pimp or gang in the middle of a turf war.
It seems that none of this has moved the council, so I want to emphasize that your constituents are watching.
I'm a member of a small business, so great. My opinion matters more than everyone else, so I'm very excited.
SOAP has already been repealed because it's not effective and it's racist and transphobic and sexist. SOAP relies on racial and gender profiling and what, telepathy? What does a prostitute look like? Is this what a prostitute looks like?
I'm also a former sex worker who worked a block away from a war on 104th. I'm also a current city employee, but I also wanted to say this. I passed Kathy Moore and called her trash while standing outside of Einstein Bagels and... Oop. Hold on.
Compelling. Really compelling stuff. I gotta say, there's just something, I'm just gonna point it out. Look, if you're a sex worker, I think that's dangerous in a lot of instances, but, you know, you do you. But there's something weird about the people testifying who say they're like sex workers or drug users who are also wearing COVID-19 masks. Like, you're having relations with random people, but you're also worried about COVID-19, so you have a mask on, or like you're injecting deadly drugs into your body, but also need to make sure you protect yourself from COVID-19. It's very strange. Just something we noticed as we were going through that video. So anyway, I'm proud of the council because they voted almost unanimously to put the soda and the soap in place. The vote was 8-1. The only council member who voted against them was Tammy Morales, a Democratic socialist. Here's the rationale she gave.
And while these bills may scratch an itch to feel like council is doing something to address public safety, to claim that these laws will address any of these problems is dangerous, and it is the epitome of performative. I do understand the desire to just wave a hand and disband the illicit street economy and the harms that are associated with it, but that is magical thinking.
Yeah, and look, I do believe that on their own, a soda order, a soap order is not going to fix these issues. You know, there are many individual things where on their own, they're not going to fix these issues. It takes commitment. It takes the ability of law enforcement to be given the authority from politicians to say, yeah, let's go in, let's enforce these laws. And there's this whole ecosystem that has to be firing on all cylinders for any of this to work. You know, there have to be enough police officers to go down to enforce these orders, to do proactive patrols, etc. There have to be judges who are willing to actually put these people in jail. There have to be jails who are actually willing to book people and to keep them there. And then it's not this cycle where people are out back on the streets. And I don't know that that entire ecosystem exists, but that doesn't mean you just don't do anything. And I think that's what Tammy Morales wants to do, is let's just not do anything. She thinks this is performative, so let's not do it at all, and let's not have any tool in place to say if you've got someone. Remember that Cairo 7, I think it was, story, this is like maybe a month ago, where they are filming this guy using fentanyl on a street corner in downtown Seattle. Police arrest him because now in Seattle they passed an ordinance where you can't do drugs out in the open. And then within the same like broadcast, that guy is back on the street corner using fentanyl again. So that's the level of absurdity that we're in. And I'd also say for these sex workers, like, I am willing to have a legitimate argument about whether sex work should be legalized. But what they fail to recognize are all of the criminal issues until that happens, right? In this ecosystem we're in right now, until you're willing to recognize all the other criminal elements that come along with sex work, like, you're not even willing to have a legitimate conversation. You think, oh, if a woman wants to sell her body, she should be allowed to, but you're not considering the societal issues that come along with someone walking up and down Aurora Avenue. I mean, first of all, people who live there shouldn't have to, and their kids shouldn't have to be subjected to 99% nude people, women, walking on the street. That's just, in a civil society, I just don't think that that's okay on a major thoroughfare. It comes along with gang turf wars. It comes along with human trafficking. I thought we cared about women. I thought we cared about the safety of women. And to suggest that some of those women aren't the victims of human trafficking is absurd. And it also brings a criminal element into that area. So yeah, if you want to have a debate about should we legalize prostitution and what does that look like, et cetera, it's a whole different conversation. I don't think Seattle is going to go in the direction. So yeah, there have to be some regulations to make sure that prostitution isn't leading to all these other dangerous, deadly, even one of those guys who testified said it. Oh, we don't need a prostitute getting caught in the middle of a gang or whatever turf war. It's like, yeah, that's the issue. Thank you, sir, for pointing out one of the issues in this. So I said, on an island, I don't know that these things have too much of an impact unless they're going to be enforced. And all the way down the chain, there's going to be efforts to try to deal with repeat offenders, right? But it's interesting because in the last few days, we've noticed a few things that it seems like there's a concerted effort to collaborate on getting downtown under control. There's a few things going on. And again, on their own, I don't think that they're a big deal. But together, it seems like there has to be something happening behind the scenes. Because, for instance, King County Metro and the Seattle Department of Transportation, they were tweeting about, which on its face is just stupid, about these lights that went up. Like these cute lights that went up on 3rd Avenue, which 3rd Avenue is like between Pike and Pine, is like the drug den central. There's like no open businesses. There's these street bazaars where they're selling all the crap they stole from Target and they're turning around and buying drugs with it. So they're celebrating that they put in these elevated lights, you know, like the kinds you'd put on your deck or something for a nice luau party. Over the weekend, new festive lighting was strung in downtown Seattle above 3rd Avenue between Stewart Street and Virginia Street. This effort builds on the more than 30 murals, recently painted in Belltown and other neighborhoods in and around downtown Seattle, and is part of Mayor Harrell's downtown activation plan. This includes a focus on making 3rd Avenue a welcoming front door to our city that connects neighborhoods and serves residents, workers, tourists, and businesses. Okay, on its face, that's stupid. Like, the lights, congratulations, you just gave people more lighting to be able to make sure that they hit their vein when they inject their fentanyl. Murals, okay, murals are great. You know what I'd rather have? An actually active storefront where a business feels like they can operate and make money and their employees and customers can be safe. It's this laughable thing. When businesses started to close in earnest in downtown Seattle, they started putting art installations in the storefronts and in the little window display areas. And they celebrated it like, oh, we're activating this downtown area with art. And some of the art was just horrible, but with art and lights. And it's like, okay, how about we get it to the point where we can activate it with businesses? Because those are, you know, storefronts that once had, you know, businesses. And it was like a very active shopping area and a place that tourists like to go. So on its own, the lights are stupid. On its own, the murals are stupid. It does nothing to activate downtown. Whether a brick wall is painted with a mural or not has no bearing on whether I'm willing to duck and dive people using fentanyl and dealing drugs and selling stolen merchandise on 3rd Avenue. Still not going to go down there. But you start to see how all of a sudden things are kind of stacking up, right? They're passing the soda. They're passing the soap. They're putting in some of these features to try to reinvigorate the environment. And then, and Nicole brought this up when we were doing show prep today, there has to be a tie here to Amazon bringing employees back to the office 5 days a week. Because Amazon is downtown. I mean, it's off downtown. But when you're talking about tens of thousands of workers, right? And them being ordered to return to the office 5 days a week, you are overnight increasing foot traffic, increasing the people who are going to be shopping, using public transportation, going to the restaurants, etc. And that's really helpful. When you have people who are flooding downtown, who aren't there to buy drugs, who aren't there to sell drugs, who aren't there to steal, who aren't there to commit shootings and engage in gang activity, etc., prostitution, and you have more people who are down there to work, to shop, to visit, than the people who are there for nefarious reasons, that's good. And so when you start to look at all of those things, individually, maybe not the biggest difference in the world, but all of those things together, more foot traffic, more legal foot traffic, lights, murals, whatever it is, and then police who hopefully are going to be empowered to actually go and enforce the stay out of drug area, stay out of area of prostitution, all of those things firing it on all cylinders could help. I'm hopeful that it might help. And then, of course, you've got the Amazonians. I just hope that Andy Jassy at Amazon sticks to this. I think that he will. But we said yesterday when we shared that Andy Jassy, the CEO of Amazon, had said, we have to come back to the office 5 days a week starting in 2025. I'm like, cue the techie temper tantrums and cue the techie temper tantrums. It only took, I love that phrase, techie temper tantrum. This is from GeekWire. A home run or a cowardly decision? Amazon's new in-person work policy elicits cheers and jeers. This is from John Scholes, president of the Downtown Seattle Association. He said, downtown's largest employer, bringing people back more frequently, is a home run for downtown. Amazon's decision reinforces the value of in-person work to the success of companies and organizations. And then there was an employee who I'm shocked is like, this is an Amazon employee on the record. They know it's not popular. They know it's not right, but they're doing it anyway. It is cowardly. I still cannot imagine being a leader and being that callous toward those I am supposed to be leading. It's heartbreaking. Why 5 days? It just makes no sense. Do I have to? God, I wish.
It's heartbreaking.
I'm heartbroken. Can you just double check? Because his name wasn't in there. That's an actual Amazon employee, right? In that article?
I'll double check.
Just double check. But we've seen stuff like that previous times where Amazon has said, okay, we got to come back a couple days a week, adding on and all this, and they go out and they protest. Can you imagine protesting the people who pay your salary? It's just a weird thing to me. And also, I've said this before on the Amazon stuff.
Oh, she was an employee. She quit to start that. She started that, you know, against Amazon channel thing. That.
Oh, like, so she was an employee so who quit was. Over stuff like she this. And now employee. She's saying, see, that makes more sense.
Quit or was let go because she has a whole channel that she devotes to towards going after Amazon.
Towards like hating Amazon. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine? So first of all, I say this all the time with Amazon. Like, it's not forced six-figure labor. Like, this isn't China or North Korea. You get paid six figures, many of you, the tech workers, to work at a wonderful company that values you, that's, you know, once beautiful city. And they treat it like it's forced labor, like someone is forcing them to stay there and do that job that pays them, like, mid six figures. Yeah, it's not forced labor. In America, you have a choice. You can continue to work there or you can take your skills somewhere else if you don't want to come to work 5 days a week. But I do agree with John Scholes of the Downtown Seattle Association. I mean, having that many employees back shopping, doing all these things, visiting the bars, visiting the restaurants, doggy daycares, dry cleaners, gyms, all this stuff. It does have a profound impact on downtown Seattle. So as that happens, these activation plans downtown, hopefully police can, you know, get keys to the handcuffs that they've been in for 10 years and actually do their jobs. Then, yeah, there might be a difference. But I was also left wondering, there must be some sporting event coming to town. Why? I guess maybe they're getting ready for the 2026 World Cup. Because the only time they ever do anything meaningful That's is true. When a sporting event's coming to town.
That's true. I think it's holiday season. So it's getting ready for the holidays. You're right. And we want to encourage shopping. And I also think this is very strategic in planning it for after the Linwood light rail opened. That so the negative here is that traffic's going to get worse, yeah. Right? But they're like, no, you have this new light rail. Take the light rail.
Yeah.
So I think it's all very strategic. Otherwise, I think they could have done this, you know, 6 months ago. Yeah. But no, they want holiday shopping. Light rail is an excuse to get around traffic, and it's very strategic. But then I, you know, as much as I would love to work from home every day and never have to drive in crazy traffic, I like coming to work. I just don't like the traffic. But I think that, you know, I don't want Seattle looking like I don't know. I haven't been to Detroit, but would I picture Detroit when it was the 8 mile situation? Yeah. Like, I don't want us to look like that. So I am for bringing back a nice, healthy, beautiful city.
Yeah, 100%. And like, I mean, even if you had painted all those abandoned Detroit homes with murals, they still would have been abandoned homes. Right. So that's just part of it. You have to convince business owners to do business down there again. And, you know, people are like, well, it was the pandemic and things changed. No, it wasn't just the pandemic. Does that play a role in it? Of course it does. Downtown was bad before the pandemic. I know because I covered it extensively before the pandemic happened. I did a lot of walk-alongs, ride-alongs with SPD. I was down there with the Downtown Seattle Association. And it was the protests in 2020 as well. When those businesses started boarding up down there, you do not, I've said this a million times, you don't board up your business just because no one's coming there. You board up your business because you're worried someone's going to break your windows, break in. You don't just simply, oh, we're not going to be down there because of the pandemic. So let's pay all this money to board up all of our windows. No, there's clearly a crime nexus. And what happened during the riots in 2020 is all these windows were smashed in, you know, that same block where Banana Republic and all these things were. And so not only did they close and leave, but then it all ended up just boarded up because people were smashing in windows. And so the fact that you don't, there's not, you know, people don't say, people say it's, oh, the pandemic related. It's just so utterly stupid to me. It's clearly not pandemic related. So let's hope that this is coordinated. I don't know if I'm ready to give Seattle that much credit, but let's just give them the benefit of the doubt and say, yeah, great job on the coordination.
Oh, I definitely think that's what, you know, Harold wants to say. Look it, I brought that downtown back. I mean, this is his bringing it back coordination attempt. But I'm not sure it'll work because until you change the politics, which they did start with the city council yesterday, but until you change all of these policies and politics of it, then it's not going to really change anything.
Yeah, and police have to actually be able to do these things and there has to be follow through. So we will see what happens. But soda, soap, Nicole, stay out of the areas of prostitution, okay?
I'm done.
I've told you once, no more going back. All right, coming up next, Bob Ferguson has not released one political ad against Dave Ryker that's truthful. Not one. And his latest ad is another example of that. First, I've talked about my success on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program. I heard from a guy, I'm not going to use his, well, I can use his name, Jesse. Can I just, gosh, I gotta share this with you because it's awesome. Sorry, I know this is going to be the worst ad ever because I have to find this text. Hold on. It's worth it. Oh, here we go. Jesse and Jackie, they started the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program this time last year. Jesse says he's down 77 pounds and his wife is down 63 pounds.
Wow.
In 1 year. Whoa, we love it. Now, I'm not down 70 pounds, but I'm down 40 pounds in the program. I've been able to keep it off for 2 years, and that's because it's not a magic trick. It's not like, you know, a pill or an injection where you've got to keep it up. It's some simple lifestyle changes, right, to the way that you eat. It's 60 days of really hard work followed by some simple changes that you can live with that don't feel like a lifelong diet. And that's what's so wonderful about the program. So schedule your free 15-minute consultation today, eastsideweightlossclinic.com, eastsideweightlossclinic.com. All right, Bob Ferguson is incapable of telling the truth, and apparently the media is incapable of forcing him to tell the truth. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. All right, so Bob Ferguson has lied and lied and lied in his political ads, and it's just crazy to me. There's been very little fact-checking that's been done in the media. I mean, we do the fact-checking. We have a pretty big audience, but I don't believe that our fact-checking hits the eyes and the ears of the people who need to see it most. And it's just, it is from his very first ad talking about he's a public safety candidate, and then to the ads talking about Dave Reichert's record on abortion, how Dave Reichert voted for 3 nationwide abortion bans, when that's not even close to true. Dave Reichert voted nationally for policies on abortion that are very similar to Washington State's policies, which are some of the most liberal abortion laws in the entire country. And now he has this ad out. I'm just going to play it in full because it's only 30 seconds about Dave Reichert on education. Watch.
As a teacher, I love making a difference for my students.
So when I heard Dave Reichert say that public school teachers are overpaid, I was disgusted.
I was angry.
Now he wants to gut funding for public schools.
By giving our tax dollars to unaccountable private schools.
It's wrong. It's extreme.
And it's not Washington.
He can't be our governor.
Take it from this teacher.
And this one.
And this one. Dave Reichert is too extreme for Washington.
Good God. Okay, so, oh my gosh, Dave Reichert says teachers are overpaid. Why would he say that? That's extreme. That's horrible. Is he trying to lose votes? Whatever it is. So that is in reference to, and it's the you could see it in the fine print that Bob Ferguson uses, talking about the Seattle Times editorial board interview. So all the gubernatorial candidates did a sit-down interview with the Seattle Times editorial board, and they asked all of them about education. So when you see that ad that says, Dave Reichert said teachers are overpaid, this is what Bob Ferguson is using to prop up that ad. Here it is.
It's not a revenue problem. It's not. It's more of a spending issue, and I think we really need to evaluate where the spending within our educational system is being applied. I know that the teachers' unions may not like to hear this, but we have some of the highest paid teachers. Didn't used to be that way, but we do today, and I think that we need to take a look at, first of all, prioritizing spending.
Yeah, anywhere in there did you hear Dave Reichert say that teachers are overpaid? Or suggest in any way that he would seek to cut teacher pay? No. What the question he was asked is about this disparate funding between some rural school districts and some urban school districts and what he would do to kind of fix that. And just this general feeling that maybe educational standards in some areas aren't as high. And all he is saying there is, because what do teachers talk about or ask for the teachers union every time they strike? They want more teacher pay. As if that's the solution to the problems that our districts are facing. And the point he's very clearly making is, no, we have some of the highest teacher pay in the nation. So it's not a teacher pay issue. We have to look at other areas where we need to invest money to improve outcome, to improve the funding and the resources for some of these rural school districts. So in no way, it's very clear in context that he's not saying that teachers are overpaid and he's going to come after teacher pay or something. He's making a factual argument. Teacher pay is not the issue here. And besides, even if he was saying that he wanted to cut teacher pay, he wouldn't be able to do that as the governor. You think for one second the WEA or any teacher union in the state and for any individual district would agree to lower their teachers' pay? Of course not. So it's just such a dishonest ad. It's insane that the TV stations allow it to be aired. It should not be allowed to air because it's a blatant lie. Now, this other claim made in the ad, can you play just a shorter clip of it?
Now he wants to gut funding for public schools.
By giving our tax dollars to unaccountable private schools.
It's wrong. Oh. It's extreme.
Extreme.
And it's not Washington.
Oh, he wants to gut funding for our public schools. Well, he supports school choice. And he's very clear about that. And that's actually becoming more and more of a mainstream opinion. Here's what he told the Ed Board.
Some of the other things that I would like to see happen as far as creating some equity would be taking a look at charter schools and more choice in where parents can send their children for education. I think that most studies have shown that charter schools do address the inequity issues. They're more adept, they're more nimble, better able to respond to the needs of the community. And one of the ideas that's been explored is this backpack idea, where you can actually take the funding that the taxes that you pay for education can actually move with your child as you choose the educational format that your child wants to, that you want your child to participate in.
Yeah, so it's about choice. So when that Bob Ferguson ad, and he's got these teachers that he's using as political props saying he wants to gut funding for public schools, no, he wants there to be a choice. So if public schools are really great, we say this all the time, if your public school system is great, firing on all cylinders, it's got good academic outcomes, teachers aren't in there pushing their political and social agenda, then what would stop parents from choosing to put their kids in a public school versus a private school? So it's about outcomes, right? So no, he's not saying gut funding for public schools. He's saying give parents a choice. And if you want parents to choose public schools, Washington Education Association, then you better make sure that the academic outcomes in public schools are better. And then they'll choose your school as opposed to sending their kid to a different school. So incredibly dishonest ad. It should be taken down. It should be illegal to air ads. Really, every ad Bob Ferguson has had, it should be against the law to air it. I genuinely believe that. And I'm not one for like regulating speech and all that. But when you have a political opponent or a political candidate who is spending a lot of money purchasing airtime during a campaign where there's not going to be any fact checking or anything like that, pushing flat out falsehoods, you should not be allowed to do that. And I would almost go as far as to say that TV stations who allow that to be done ought to have something happen to their FCC license. Because it's very clear, it's not like, look, if there's wiggle room, right, where it's like, well, semantics, the ad's technically true, that's fine. But he's had so many ads that have been just blatantly false. This is one of them. He shouldn't be allowed to get away with it. I hope he's called out about it at the debate tonight. I hope Dave Reichert calls him out and asks him on stage, hey, are you willing to acknowledge tonight or to promise tonight that you'll stop airing these dishonest ads? I would like to hear Bob Ferguson asked about that. Absolutely absurd. Insane. Do we have time for Jim? Nicole's like, I don't know. So I have this, we taped an interview with Jim Walsh. I think we can get to it here. It's just, I've got to be out at one today because I'm going to Spokane for the debate. So maybe we'll skip some national news or something like that. We'll see where it ends up. But you've probably heard about this. So the Washington State Republican Party has filed in recent weeks, not one, but two lawsuits related to election integrity. So we're going to get to the interview with Jim Walsh coming up next. First, you've heard us talking about Natchez RV Resort. And you're probably like, Brandy, well, I don't have an RV. But Natchez RV Resort looks really cool. Well, I've got good news for you. They now have turnkey park models if you don't have an RV that you can come check out. And that way you can enjoy everything that Natchez RV Resort has to offer. They've got their new 4,300 square foot clubhouse they just opened up, indoor outdoor fireplace, massive great room, gourmet kitchen. They've got the pool that they're working on finishing and their hot tub. Pickleball courts, tennis courts, a doggy playground, playground for children too, don't worry. And then, of course, 300 days of sunshine. So Natchez RV Resort is just an amazing place to be year-round, fishing nearby, hunting, snow skiing, golf, river rafting, outstanding wine tasting, and more just minutes away. So make a reservation now to check out their park models, their new clubhouse, and the amazing lifestyle at Natchez RV Resort. You can check them out, NatchezRVResort.com, NatchezRVResort.com. Okay, talking about the lawsuits from the Washington State Republican Party. So one of them has to do with a ballot system called OmniBallot that King County used to help cure ballots in the primary election. And then another one has to do with the waiving of a 30-day residency requirement for voters. So Jim Walsh was nice enough to come on and talk about the status of both those lawsuits. Jim Walsh, welcome back to Undivided.
Good to talk to you, Brandy. It's been an interesting couple of weeks.
Yeah, it has, hasn't it? So you guys have been busy. Two lawsuits now related to election integrity. Let's talk about the first one, challenging the use of this OmniBallot system for curing ballots in King County. Where does that lawsuit stand?
We asked for a quick decision from the state court on that one. We have not gotten, so far, the quick decision we wanted. The state court is chewing on it. They're reviewing it. We have had some talks with the lawyers for King County Elections and agreed to a few things along the way, but we're going to need the court to make a ruling about our challenge there. And that is about this phone app called OmniBallot. And King County Elections has used it for certain county local elections. That are covered by a section of state law separate of the main body of Washington state election law. That's RCW chapter 29A and its subsections. So they've used it for elections that are not covered by that body of law. No, we're not touching that. Maybe that's good, maybe that's not. What we're talking about is the use of the phone app to cure ballots. That means fix things like signatures that don't match and other problems with a ballot that are covered by 29A. That means standard primary elections and general elections under the main body of Washington state election law. We are arguing that the language in the state law about curing ballots in a primary or a general is very clear that a third party can't come between the voter and the election official at the county level.
Yeah.
And what this app does is it puts a third party between the two.
So a couple things. Obviously, this is relevant more so. I mean, I'm not saying you guys wouldn't have sued over it if we didn't have this minuscule vote difference in the Commissioner of Public Lands race where the curing of the ballots really made a difference this time around. But when would you have to, you asked for a quick decision, when would you have to have, let's say they were going to rule in your favor, when are the ballots being printed where that would be a make or break situation?
Some of them are already in process, so okay. The, it's a diminishing return on getting a court ruling that'll help us with the primary that just happened.
Gotcha.
But this is we also asked for a forward-looking resolution to this because we don't want King County or any county to use this phone app for curing ballots on a going forward basis in the general election coming up in November or any regular state election covered by RCW 29A in the future. And the key part here is the laws that exist when you're curing a ballot, fixing a signature, says that there has to be a secure and direct connection between the individual curing the ballot, the voter, and the county.
Yeah.
And the state puts out a standard affidavit form that voters who need to cure their ballots are supposed to sign with wet ink that shows they're really them. And this app, which does not include anything like that, it's a check the box on an app type thing, is clearly not compliant with the law, in our opinion. So we don't want it used for that. There may be other uses for the app where it can be used legally. But for this purpose, we believe the law is clear that it can't be used for curing ballots.
Yeah, in King County, to my understanding, they've been using OmniBallot, like you said, for a long time for other things that you haven't had a per se issue with, and they just started using it for this purpose, which became very relevant this time. You said something in there that, well, you've been waiting for a ruling. You and King County Elections have agreed to some things. Can you share what those are? Are they changes or?
Well, it's hard to say because it's litigation that's in process. But there have been a few communications between our lawyers and the King County Elections lawyers that have agreed on a few basic premises of the lawsuit. So what we want is we want the court to not get into detailed and time-consuming depositions and fact findings. We'd like to establish a pretty quick agreement on the facts and get the court to focus on the law, because we believe it's an issue of the statutory language and the law and not a thing where we're going to bicker over what the facts of the situation are.
Yeah.
Now, I, you know, this is a standard stuff in any kind of lawsuit, and it's always subject to change. So, but there have been some good initial conversations where we want to try to get the court to give us a relatively quick ruling, looking more at the law in question than a dispute over the facts.
Yeah, I mean, either the law says you can use it or the law says you can't use it for this purpose. It seems pretty clear. Now, I don't know if you watched my show. I actually had a little bit of disagreement with the state Republican Party about the two goals of the lawsuit, like challenging whether OmniBallot should be used moving forward. I think that's perfectly fair and relevant, and a judge needs to make a decision on that. What I disagree on is any sort of effort to invalidate the signatures in King County or the ballots in King County that were cured in this way. And the reason I disagreed with that, and maybe we could hash this out, is, first of all, I don't want the Republican Party to be the party that's seen as disenfranchising voters. That's the Democratic Party in our state. They harass signature gatherers. They try to undermine lawful initiatives. They ask the Secretary of State to break the law. So my problem with that, and what I wanted the state party to do, is explicitly tell the court, we're not going to seek to overturn any of the ballots that were cured in that way. Because think about those voters, Jim. They did what their county party or what their county elections allowed them to do in using this app. They're lawful voters who went about the process of curing their ballots. Why would you seek to have those nullified?
Well, we didn't ask for any nullification of anything. We left it to the court to decide whether there is even a remedy that could be applied to the primary.
But you weren't opposed to the idea. You weren't opposed to the idea of those 2,000 ballots or so that were being challenged being nixed.
Well, no, but we didn't propose it either. We just asked the court to consider what the right remedy would be. We did not suggest any specific remedy. We asked the court if it could, in the time window that was available, to consider remedies. There would have been a number of ways to potentially remedy that situation. But the, you know, clearly, in practical terms, the focus of our request to the court is give us a ruling that will very likely apply on a going forward basis.
Yeah, would you be willing to
the motion was clear.
Just for the point that I'm making now, though, would you be willing to say you don't think it would be fair to, if the court were to nullify the ballots of those voters? Like, if they came out today and wanted to do that, what would you say?
I don't think fair is the issue. I mean, it's not practical. It's not realistic. Okay, we would look for a remedy that would be fair. But the practical reality is the window is closing on anything involving the primary that's passed. Yeah. And the focus of our request of the court is a remedy going forward, is some kind of order to clear this up on a going forward basis. And at this point in time, the state party is very focused on the November general election.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, I think you're right. For the sake of this show, frankly, we have been drilling Democrats for real, genuine efforts to undermine our democratic process in our state. And I don't want to see, you know, the Republican Party sort of fall into that on something that I don't believe would be fair, given those voters did what was allowed of them. Let's talk about the second lawsuit. This one's interesting. So talk about the basis for it first.
Okay. It's a little more complicated.
Yeah.
Our state constitution, as well as our state election law, requires a person who's registering to vote in Washington state to be resident wherever it is they live, at their residence, for 30 days before they register to vote. Now, under current law, they can register to vote and vote the same day. But in order to register properly, they need to be wherever they are, live where they live, for 30 days. And this is a good public policy. It's in the state constitution. And the idea is to assure that a person is a legitimate resident of the state of Washington and not jetting in just for the purpose of voting in an election and jetting out or something. So it's a longstanding public policy in our state, this 30-day residency requirement. Most states have a similar requirement. Some have an even longer requirement. But ours has been 30 days. And a few months ago, a group that is nominally representing senior citizens and some other groups sued the state secretary of state, claiming that this 30-day residency requirement was somehow unfair to them. And the secretary of state was then defended by the attorney general, and they constructed a consent decree, an agreement, basically a settlement by which they agreed to waive enforcement of the 30-day residency requirement. So now a person can jet into Washington, claim that they live at an apartment on Queen Anne Hill, register to vote on election day, vote, and then jet back to Barbados or wherever they were before. And that, at least according to the state attorney general, Ferguson, and the secretary of state, Hobbs, is okay by this consent decree, this settlement entered in at a state court. We are suing in federal court saying that is not good, that's not proper, that the consent decree was not properly executed, and that you can't undo language in the state constitution with a settlement agreement in the court. If Ferguson and Hobbs want to change the 30-day residency requirement in the state constitution, they need to do it the right way. They need to do a constitutional amendment and put it through the legislature and put it to the people and have that 30-day requirement changed or removed. They can't do it with this kind of rigged kind of set up, which is what we believe it was, consent decree in court to overturn a constitutional standard for our election integrity. So to us, it's a very big deal. The consent decree was entered about 6 months ago. It was earlier this year, kind of March of this year. And we've been looking at it for a while and put together what we think is a very strong case in federal court to overturn this consent decree.
Yeah, so let's just look at this from what would be the most nefarious reason for this and, you know, the most boring reason for this. On the boring end, like, what would be a practical reason why someone would want the 30-day residency requirement waived? Something that's not, you know, seeking to do something shady.
Well, I mean, the argument that this nonprofit organization made was that requiring a 30-day residency before you could register to vote is discriminatory. And they made a bunch of arguments about how people might move around, people might move in with their kids, whatever. By implication, there was sort of a homeless element here that somehow this discriminates against homeless people. To us, those arguments are well and good, but again, if you want to change the public policy in the Constitution, there's a proper way to amend the Constitution. We believe that this lawsuit was basically a signaled setup for this consent decree to be entered very quickly and for politically partisan players to use getting rid of the 30-day residence requirement to register people of all sorts in a way that is not constitutional and not legal, and get them voting in as much as a day, as much as 24 or even 12 hours.
So that's what you see as the nefarious intent. You see that as the nefarious intent. I mean, if you look at
that. Well, at least opening the door to it, yes.
Right, and opportunities for fraud is a big deal, and I think that's what we see a lot of in our state, is not fraud per se, but opportunities for fraud. And I know that's the concern with the mail-in voting system. But, like, wouldn't you have to, and again, I'm all for this lawsuit as well, because it's not seeking to undo anything. It's seeking to say, okay, what are we going to do moving forward? But, I mean, it would take quite the concerted effort to, you know, register enough people same day to vote to make a difference, right?
Well, people make concerted efforts, Brandy, especially at election time. We've seen situations, particularly up in Northwest Washington, where in some recent elections, there have been a lot of same-day registration of college students up in the Bellingham area. Hmm. That, by the letter of the law, may be lawfully done, but may have been done in an orchestrated way to tilt the scales in one legislative district a different way. Now, by the letter of the same-day registration, same-day voting, that kind of effort would be legal, but it opens the door to fraud and abuse, and it is certainly not the spirit of our election law, both under RCW 29A and, more importantly, in, I believe it's Article 6 of the state constitution, which talks about that 30-day voting. You got to live here 30 days, wherever you live, before you can register to vote and then vote.
Yeah. All right, Jim Walsh, well, we appreciate it. Any timeline for that second lawsuit?
We're hoping to get something well in advance of the November election. So hopefully in the next few weeks. Time is of the essence on both of these. And I want to say too, Brandy, these are two steps in trying to secure and add integrity to our election processes in Washington. They aren't the only two steps. There's more that we can do, but we're trying to find the most practical and most narrowly focused things we can do now to improve our elections. There will be more to come in the months and years ahead.
All right, Jim Walsh, chair of the Washington State Republican Party. We appreciate it. I'll see you tonight in Spokane.
Yeah, good to see you, and look forward to it tonight.
So we appreciate Jim filling us in on those. And again, like, I'm all for everything to make sure that only legal voters are voting. I do think there's something a little weird about allowing someone to just show up and to vote instantly. Like, even if you just literally legally moved here, like, let's say you came here from another state, I want you to be able to vote somewhere. But does it make sense to vote in a state that you moved to 3 days ago? I don't think so. So that'll all get hashed out in court. Thanks to Jim for briefing us on those, and we'll follow those two lawsuits. All right, we're going to get to our daily subscriber show poll questions, comments coming up next. First, remember our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital is having another one of his Know Your Risk live webinars. It's hard to say. Know Your Risk webinar. Know Your Risk Radio live webinar is coming up September 26th. It's at 3:30 p.m., totally free. You can sign up by going to knowyourriskradio.com. They make it super easy. It just pops up, and you can click and say register. And it's a good opportunity to not only hear from Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital about risk management, especially right now. There's a lot happening globally, a lot happening nationally that can impact your retirement portfolio. So you can hear about how Bulwark Capital actively manages risk. And also, you can ask some questions. So if you've got some questions specific to maybe your circumstances or whether you're doing enough to manage your risk, he can answer those as well. So you can register now, knowyourriskradio.com. Again, knowyourriskradio.com. That live webinar is happening Thursday, September 26th at 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. All right, we're going to skip national. I've got a Gavin Newsom story, but we'll get to it tomorrow. He wants to just step on the First Amendment. Not a surprise. I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll about our top story today. Do you believe the soda and soap ordinances in Seattle will be helpful? So stay out of drug area, stay out of area of prostitution, yes or no? Let's see what our wise, wonderful subscribers think. On Patreon, 66% of you right now saying no, you don't think the policies will be helpful. Juliet says these won't do anything, not without consequences for violating the orders. And I agree. Jack Hartstock says he agrees too. He says correct. And that's part of it. It's like no law. You can put any law you want on the books, but if you're not enforcing it actively, then it doesn't mean anything. So it has to be followed up with enforcement. Amelia says, so the ordinance is to keep criminals out of crime areas? Huh. I can hear them now. Oh my gosh, we can't go in that area to commit a crime because it's against the law. Yeah, that's kind of a good point. I mean, the one benefit of this is if they're even in that area, that's a crime. So they don't have to necessarily go back to that area and be caught dealing drugs or using drugs or whatever. Just them being in that area is a crime. So for those beat officers in downtown Seattle who know, they know who these people are. They know their names. They know their faces. So they can on site arrest them. The question is what's going to happen after they're arrested. Let's see what's happening over on locals. Yeah, about the same. 70% of people saying they don't think these policies will help. Mac 52 says it won't work if police aren't allowed to enforce it and prosecutors don't prosecute them. Poder says, well, it won't hurt. And that's kind of where I'm at too, is like, it can't hurt, right? Well, according to the people who testified in their masks, it's going to hurt them quite a bit. And again, like whenever I do a story on prostitutes, sorry, sex workers, women of the night, I don't know what the preferred women of the night. Whenever I do a story on that, I always get sex workers who email me and who say, hey, you know, you're being like, and they're always reasonable. Like I do this, here's like, I do it to like, you know, support my children and my family. They don't seem crazy like the people who are in there. But they always say, you know, they go back to that legalization argument. And I get that, but I think it's a totally different argument to talk about legalization versus what we're doing right now while it's illegal and the crime. Because if you're legalizing it, I don't know that you have to have as much of the, you're not going to have as much of the gang activity around it. You're not going to have the pimps as much. You'll still have them. And the human trafficking element, if women can kind of take control of the situation on their own, but I don't know.
Might want to turn my mic on. I do think that there's you mentioned this before, but there, you have to have a conversation about it and acknowledge all the other arguments, right, against it and things like that. Because, yeah, I think it is, somebody brought this up in the comments, but it is like legalizing marijuana and realizing that there is a whole lot of downside to that as well. And I know lots of people that voted to legalize it and now are like, oh, wait, not so much. I wouldn't do that again. But I also know people that very much appreciate.
Yeah. Did our daily show poll didn't get on X? I don't know if I just didn't hit post. Did I not put it on X? Yeah, I'm sorry to our X subscribers. I really failed you today. I must not have hit post on it. So I'll post it after the show and you can still vote on it. And I will read your responses because I apologize. All right. Some other comments. Casey L says, where's the blue haired teacher with nose rings and a rainbow flag in their classroom? They weren't represented in the ad. I wonder why. Oh, that teacher ad for Bob Ferguson.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, we were saying, and somebody said, go find their social media. If you know any of the teachers who are in that ad, I'm just curious to research them a little bit and see if they have any like background we need to know of. They might not. I'm not saying target them.
Verify their teachers.
Just email.
I want to know if that one lady really does wear those glasses that she's wearing.
Oh, in the ad? Why?
Yeah, the aviators. I don't know. They're very trendy.
In the ad, there were aviators in the ad?
Yeah. They're like aviator glasses, but they're glasses.
Oh,
like old man glasses, like 70s style old man glasses.
Oh, in the above. Oh, yeah. Matthew Cook, when teachers are paid based on tenure rather than merit, then some are overpaid. As a kid and as a parent, every year there was that one teacher you knew was bad and you didn't want your kid to have them. Yeah. Rick Johnson, why are these teachers participating in dishonest and misleading ads? Because it would be the nightmare of the Washington Education Association for Dave Reichert to be elected.
Yeah. And like the people he's talking to, they don't research.
Yeah.
They just read the
script.
Oh,
they're like, Democrat? Bob wants me to be in an ad? 100%. Mary Christie, just like legal marijuana, legal prostitution will end up being a joke and blow up to a huge problem. Just like marijuana, the black market will continue to avoid taxes. Legalizing stuff doesn't help. And that's probably a good point.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see. Kara, Brandy, fair would be to invalidate the votes and re-remedy them the proper legal way. So talking about the omni-ballot lawsuit, my only issue is I think it's wrong to disenfranchise voters for doing something that their county elections office allowed them to do. That's the fault of the county elections office, not the fault of those voters. The voters went about the process of curing their ballot because there was usually a signature issue. That's how the county told them to do it. That's how they did it. So I think it would be very fair to say, okay, those 2,000 votes are nullified, even though...
Well, I think she's saying give them another opportunity to do it the right
100%.
Way.
If they were willing to do that, but the election's already been certified and all of that stuff. So I think it's going to be a moot point only because, you know, they're not going to nullify those votes and they're not even going to be able to do it, even if they wanted to, do it in time for the ballot to be printed. Mm-hmm. So, Mandy, on the carbon emissions making people commute, how does Jay feel about this? Oh, for Amazon.
He feels like they should get on the light rail.
Yeah, he wants them to get on the light rail. That's for sure. Plan. Country guy, our chief law enforcement officer only enforces laws he likes. I'm not an attorney, but I didn't think that's how laws work. Yeah, talking about Bob Ferguson. But you know, the thing about him lying so much, because he hates cops, right? Mm-hmm. Although he's saying he just loves cops, right? Can you imagine if a police officer lied as much as Bob Ferguson lies, or in the way Bob Ferguson lies? He would be a Brady violation. So basically, you would not be allowed to testify in a court of law. And when you're a Brady violator, if you're a known liar as a police officer, you're going to lose your job. In fact, that's one of the quickest ways to lose your job as a police officer, because if you're not trustworthy, none of your evidence is going to be admissible. Or if it is, you're going to have an issue testifying in a court of law. So Bob Ferguson does things that would get a police officer fired. That's something he ought to be asked about.
Get anyone fired.
Right. But
all
it's like,
these lies. Lies, lies, lies.
It's insane. It's insane that people believe it. So, all right. Good comments per the usual before we get to our closing sanity check. If you're thinking about selling your home at some point this year, check out a few real estate agents, but don't select one until you've talked to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Sharona Rhodes and her husband did when they went to sell their home. And she said that Wes and his team staged their home so well that her own daughter didn't even recognize it.
So now it's, okay, the house is empty and you're seeing all the things that you've never really noticed. Like, oh my goodness, there's a broken baseboard over there. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness, that looks terrible. You know, and he's like, calm down. Staging will take care of it. Just don't worry about it. They came in and they staged everything. And my 17-year-old daughter just graduated high school. So we went in to look at the house after the stage and she said, Mom, I would buy this house. You've always hated our house. She said, this house is aesthetic. I love this house. Like, okay, 17-year-old child.
Yeah. So check out sellwithwes.com. And by the way, he was able to sell their home in 6 days for over list price. So the staging absolutely is part of the whole package that Wes Jones and his team bring to the table. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. Is that what the kids say these days? This is aesthetic.
No. Well, I wouldn't know.
Way hipper than me.
Who knows?
I have to fit one more comment in before I get to sanity check, because Captain Cranky Pants said, what's the difference between prostitution and dating someone and having sex with them for dinner and drinks? Women don't do that.
Girls gotta eat.
Women don't do that. No, I don't know. I just thought that was an interesting comment. Like, are you speaking from experience? Is there something going on that you want to talk about? Anyway, let's get to our closing sanity check and the biggest gaslighter of them all. All right, to the White House briefing room and another showdown between Peter Ducey and Karine Jean-Pierre, where again, Karine Jean-Pierre wins the award for the biggest gaslighter in the history of everything, all time, ever.
2 days since somebody allegedly tried to kill Donald Trump again. And you're here at the podium in the White House briefing room calling him a threat.
President Biden has been clear-eyed about the threat that the former president represents to our democracy.
How many more assassination attempts on Donald Trump until the president and the vice president and you pick a different word to describe Trump other than threat?
Peter, if anything from this administration, I actually completely disagree with the premise of your question, the question that you're asking. It is also incredibly dangerous in the way that you're asking it, because American people are watching. And to say that from an administration who has consistently condemned political violence, from an administration where the president called the former president and was thankful, grateful that he was okay, from an administration who has called out January 6th, called out the attack of Paul Pelosi, called out and said we need to lower the temperature after the Butler incident, and now for you to make that kind of comment in your question, because your question involved a comment and a statement, and you know, it is that is also incredibly dangerous.
Yeah, it's not her rhetoric that's dangerous. It's Peter Ducey doing his job and asking her about her rhetoric that is truly dangerous. Man, I'm supporting Donald Trump just so we can get a new White House press secretary. That has been your sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Happy debate day. We'll have analysis of all the key debates tomorrow on our live show at noon. I'm going to jet off to Spokane. Watch this one in person. Maybe give Bob Ferguson a little bit of a stare down. What do you think, Nicole?
Do it.
Do
it. Make him nervous.
Make him nervous. Make him sweat. If you've not signed up to support our show already, you can do it for just $5 a month. UndividedPod.com. UndividedPod.com. We'll see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.